The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Top 5, a show where we count things down from number 5 all the way to number 1. I'm Stephen Schleicher. This week on the show, Top 5 Sequels. Now, this is actually an episode that we did way back in 2012. So this is a topic we've done before, but it's been over 10 years or around 10 years. So why don't we hit it up again? You know, if it worked the first time, might as well do it again. Oh, speaking of things that worked the first time, here's Matthew Peterson.
How dare you, sir?
Hey, I gave you credit for working the first time. Let's see how he works this time. Matthew, what do you have for your number 5 slot on your top 5 sequels?
Now, I did not listen to the original episode because I didn't have time today. Good. Okay. So if any of these are duplicates, just think of them as sequels to the sequel. My number 5 is one of my favorite kinds of sequels. It's a comic book that is, in fact, a sequel to a live-action film. In 1991, Marvel Comics put out my number 5, Bill and Ted's Excellent Comic Book. This came out in the wake of the second Bill and Ted movie, I believe, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. And they did a Marvel Comics adaptation, and it was done by Evan Dorkin, who, by the way, if you know Evan Dorkin, you know this comic is not going to be your average flibbertigibbety. And so, essentially, you come right out of Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, which, by the way, if you read the comic, it has the original ending where the villain Denomalous gets like brutally killed on panel, which did not happen in the film. Apparently, there was a change after the comic book went to press. But you then have them transition into adventures. Bill S. Preston Esquire, Ted Theodore Logan go off into the world. They start out, we're going to have a party to represent our marriage. And of course, it's Dorkin. So he makes sure to bring in Rufus. He makes sure to bring in Death. And it's wild. It's really, really good. And unlike a lot of the sequels that I have seen recently, in terms of sequels to movies, not specifically sequels to Bill and Ted, because I kind of enjoyed Face the Music, it takes everything that you like about the Bill and Ted, but it takes it in a different direction. It's not necessarily saying, hey, remember when they said 69 dude in front of the Circle K? That's not necessarily the point of it. It's really, we're taking these characters. They're married now. They have to figure things out in life, and they just sort of floop out into life. And they actually did, a couple of years ago, a reprint of it. But it should be noted that the reprint version that I bought did not have the complete story. It's actually missing an issue or two. So I think, and I don't know if it ever went to print, but I think there was talk of Boom, which had the Bill and Ted license, doing like an omnibus edition. Mm-hmm. And I hope that came out so that you guys can just walk into your store and say, hey, I want the Bill and Ted's Excellent Comic Book omnibus, so that you can just bathe in the Clinton era goodness of it. It's crazy and it's Dorkin and it's good stuff.
Yeah, there you go. My number 5 is also a comic book. I have been greatly enthralled by the works of Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, and they blew me away back in late 2020, early 2021 with their series Reckless, which tells the story of Ethan Reckless, who used to work for the CIA, but then had to leave because of an issue that you do find out in the first book. And it was great. It was a great, it's basically what if, James Gardner met Matt Helm or somebody like that. It's those kinds of gritty, kind of pulpy detective stories. So the follow up to that book, which came out in April of 2021, is called Friend of the Devil, a Reckless Book. And in this one, it's 1985. And Ethan, he owns this old movie theater, and he's usually kept it closed. He doesn't have it for open public showing. but he goes in there and watches old movies all the time. And he comes across, while watching a B movie, he comes across this woman who's been missing since the 1970s. No one's seen her. The only time she's been seen is in this movie. And so that sends him down a path going back into the 1970s of what happened to this woman. And let's just say there's the occult is a cult group is involved in this. It gets a little creepy. It gets a little weird. But in the end, it's a very satisfying and maybe a little bit graphic ending, but it's still a really good book. You don't have to read these in any particular order, although the books do come out in a chronological order, in the sense that each book takes place later in Ethan's life. But this one you could read just as a standalone and still be able to understand what's going on. That being said, the first Reckless book, I would definitely pick up as well. In fact, I'd pick up all the books in the Reckless series. But as far as sequels go, Friend of the Devil from Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, printed by Image Comics. It's a standalone graphic novel. He doesn't release these as single issues, which I really, really appreciate. So I know about two or three times a year, I'm going to be plunking down $25 for a new Reckless book. The art by Sean Phillips and his son, Jacob Phillips, is outstanding. The stories are super solid. If you like those kind of adventure novels from the 70s and 80s that were all the rage when men actually used to read books on a regular basis, this is a comic book, but still, Friend of the Devil scores really high for me, and that is why it is my number five of my top five sequel.
Friend of the Devil.
Yeah. Matthew, what do you have for your number four?
My number four actually was suggested by my child, because I often I'll talk this out loud and the people in the house hear me. And I'm like, okay, top five sequels. And the child was immediately like, Deadpool 2. And I thought about it and I'm like, you know, I like Deadpool 2 a lot better than I liked the original Deadpool film. And Deadpool's a good movie. I mean, it's not like it's bad by any means. But more importantly, it's a film that the child and I went and saw together. And it's a film that, aside from two missteps that are in the upper range of minor to oof, one of those, of course, being the weird death of Marina Baccarid's character, and the other being the presence of TJ Miller, who kind of skeeves me out now. It's a really solid movie. And it's a movie where I feel like Ryan Reynolds got to do what he wanted to do with Deadpool. So not just breaking the fourth wall, although that's in there. There's actually a campaign before the film came out pumping up the X-Force characters and how X-Force is going to be in this movie. And they apparently recorded a bunch of stuff that only went into previews featuring X-Force. Because if you've seen the movie, X-Force doesn't quite turn out the way that they thought it was going to. And it's full of things that you can go, hey, I know that. But it also works as a film where you don't have to know that, you know, the young boy that they're trying to save is actually a kid named Firefist in the comics. You don't need to know anything about Domino to enjoy her when she pops up. You don't have to try and suss out the backstory of Cable. They give you everything you need to know about Cable and they throw it in there. And then there are moments that you can go, oh, that's this, that's that. But it's not required to understand the movie.
Well,
I feel like that's the big thing.
To be honest, if you're doing a comic book movie today and you're like, oh, in order to really all of you millions upon millions of people who are going to go to the movie theater to see this superhero movie, what you really need to do is track down a 30-year-old comic book series from the 90s that only like 100,000 people read. So 100,000 of you are definitely going to get this movie. The rest of you, you better do your research. No, if that's the approach that you do to a movie today, it's going to fail instantly.
You know, that's one of my big complaints with Man of Steel. That's one of my big complaints with some of Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy. That's one of my big complaints about the Justice League from 2017 is it is tied into 1987 continuity in a way that if you don't understand that, I feel like is actually lessened.
I would definitely argue against that in that you don't make a movie for 100,000 people and hope that a million people come and see your movie.
Right. And I think that that is a valid point, and you're allowed to be wrong. But more importantly,
well, I think you're the one that's in the wrong here, buddy.
I will let you
go on with your proclamation.
You're going to let me finish, but you just want me to know that Nelly did the greatest album of all time. Okay, so here's the thing, though. Deadpool 2, the parts of it that don't work are generally overshadowed by parts that work really, really well. And it has a whole tone to it where we get to the end and there's this final, dun, 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 and it's a big setup for, oh no, is it going to be a countdown? And, you know, the lucky character's like, I don't know, maybe 7. And they enter the code and it works. And it's a standard movie moment of, oh wow, crisis averted, followed by Reynolds muttering under his breath, that's just lazy writing. And he wrote part of the film. And I feel like that's what works for me the best for Deadpool 2. So if you haven't seen Deadpool 2, go watch Deadpool 2. It's a pretty solid movie. Plus, the Juggernaut has a song that will just knock you in the dirt. It's that good.
All right. My number 4, also a movie. I think if you're going to do sequels, I think there would be a lot of listeners who would be very, 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 very upset if Empire Strikes Back was not on the list. So I'm going to just put it there as the, there you go, listeners. There's your token Empire Strikes Back moment. Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker, I am your father. No, my hand.
It's impossible.
A little green man living in a swamp, Cloud City. Well, hello. And
I talk like Grover. Oh, I'm sorry. Grover talked like me.
So that's my number 4, Empire Strikes Back. Matthew, what do you have for your number 3?
Well, knowing you as well as I do, I said to myself, Steven's definitely going to have The Empire Strikes Back. And so
I only put it on there. Again, it's only on there because everybody would be angry if one of us did not say Empire Strikes Back. So I'm just, I am falling upon the stake.
The sword
or the stake or the lightsaber in this case. And putting Empire Strikes Back on my list. Again, my hand.
Fortunately for you. Being me and knowing the way that the universes of fandom work, I was going to do that. And I said, no, Steven will do that. So I will fall on the stake of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, which picks up from Star Trek, The Motionless Picture, and actually gives us a really good Star Trek story, gives us the Spock, oh, the deeds of the many. Oh, no. Oh, we're dying. Oh, everything explodes. Oh, Kirk, from the heart of hell, I stab at thee. Nobody loses a hand, but we do find out that somebody is secretly somebody's father. So mine is Star Trek II. That way we have appeased both sides of fandom and we have avoided the you forgot. That makes me so angry on the interwebs.
And I will say that anybody that's sitting there going, oh, I'm sure they're going to put Back to the Future 2 on the list. There was no other Back to the Future movies after the first one because the first one was so perfect. I mean, if you did a 2 or a 3 Back to the Future, they would have to pale in comparison to the first one. And thus, we can prove that time travel exists because somebody went back in time and erased those movies from existence.
If they ever existed.
They ever existed at all. Okay, what do we got? What are we on to our number 3s, Matthew? What do you have for number 3?
You just did
my number 3.
I did my number 3. This is your number 3.
So Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is a pretty informative, influential book when I was, I don't know, third grade, fourth grade, something like that, whenever you first pick up your first copy of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and it was a blast. Also happened to be about the same time that the BBC series came to America on PBS, so I got to see that as well and loved every minute of it. Also came out about the same time, or at least when I read it, around the same time that NPR did the rebroadcast of the BBC audio version of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And so I was primed, I tell you, to laugh along with Arthur Dent and the rest of the goons as they traverse the universe until I got to the end of book one. And I was like, oh, no, the book is over, until Zaphod Beeblebrox pops his heads into the bay and says, anybody hungry? How about we go to the restaurant at the end of the universe for a quick bite? I will honestly say Restaurant at the End of the Universe blows by so quickly when I read that the first time that I often equate, and a lot of the reason why I often equate Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and Restaurant at the End of the Universe as a single book is because both the BBC audio and the BBC television show both combined those two books together into one story. Yeah.
And I initially read them together as one volume.
Yeah, I think for me it was Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was at our local Alco or something in their book magazine section. I was like, oh, this looks really good. And then I had to wait like 2 or 3 months for the second book to appear in that paperback form. The one that I had the hardest trouble reading was the third book. What's the third book in the series?
Let's see. It goes Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Restaurant at the End of the Universe, So Long and Thanks for All the Fish.
No, that is... Sorry, that's book four. I was just reaching over and grabbing all of the books that I still have from when I was a kid. So right here on my bookshelf, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, number one. Restaurant at the End of the Universe, number two. Life, the Universe, and Everything, book three. That is the one that I had the hardest time getting through until I got to the part where Arthur Dent learned how to fly, which is by throwing yourself at the ground and missing. Also, I will say, when you look at the heights of these three paperbacks, the Restaurant at the End of the Universe, second book in the series, it's actually about a quarter of an inch shorter than the other two books. And then, of course, the fourth book is So Long and Thanks for All the Fish, which also happens to be the same size as the Restaurant at the End of the Universe. And then Mostly Harmless was book five, and I never read book six. So there you go.
Trying to remember if I've read book six.
I would have to go back and see what the name of that one was, but I definitely didn't buy it.
And Another Thing. And while it was actually written by another author, it was written by the Artemis Fowl guy, Ian Corcoran.
Yeah, but it was based on Douglas Adams' notes. So it wasn't like a new, fresh creation that's like, we've got to keep this franchise going quick, find somebody to write this. It was... Douglas Adams had written up a whole bunch of notes on how that book would go, and then they got that guy to write it. But yeah, I've never read that.
Got yourself a Silmarillion situation there.
Not right, not quite. Silmarillion was already is J.R.R. Tolkien. It's totally his stuff.
Silmarillion.
So that is my number three, The Restaurant at the End of the Universe. Put a penny in your bank now, then when you travel forward into the future, all the interest will accrue and you'll be able to afford one of the most expensive meals. Just don't get into the blacker than black ship at the end of your meal.
Because then you'll have to read the black readout on the black background and push the black button against the black wall.
Yep. Moves like a fish, steers like a cow.
I've been dead for tax purposes for about a year. That's actually a good one. That should have been on my list, but you know.
You're just a bad sequel person. You should
I'm pretty sure that was on my list the first time we did it, and I didn't want to do it again. That's my story, and I'm sticking
somebody
to
will
it.
Listen to it and go and find out. Go back into 2012 in the archive. Listen to all the shows. We don't care.
My number two.
We're up to our number twos already. Well, this should be a great time to let people know that the only reason why this show continues, Lord knows why this show continues, but one of the primary reasons why this show continues is because we have a great group of patrons over at patreon.com/majorspoilers who join us over there and give a little back for all the value that we've been giving in the 10 years since the last Top 5 Sequels episode released. And we thank each and every one of you for that. If you'd like to join our growing group of fans, we love each and every one of you who are patrons, and we'd like to see more of you join us. It's really cool over there at Patreon. Join us at patreon.com/majorspoilers, and we'll see about keeping this show going into 2032. And that will then bring us back around to our number twos. Matthew, what do you have?
For our number two. My number two is a sequel, both in the broad sense and in a very literal sense, in that in 1977, something happened, and then this came 35 years later. But it is very important that when you say my number two, Kaizoku Sentai Gokaiger, is not merely a sequel, the latest entry in a Super Sentai meta series. It serves as a direct sequel to the previous 34 Super Sentai, to the point where three different series have their actual storylines ended during this 35th anniversary show. And the really wonderful part is that initially, when Gokaiger launched, it was meant to be, you know, we're going to do a cool, you know, anniversary show. We're going to do callbacks and bring back old characters and old actors. And during the production of the show, there was a tsunami, a tidal wave in Japan. And during the aftermath of that tidal wave, a lot of the characters and actors who had been on the show, been part of the Super Sentai backstory, started popping up on social media and saying, hey, be brave. You know, I used to be a superhero on TV, blah, blah, blah. You know, public access, public service kind of things, trying to keep everybody's spirits up. And so they expanded about halfway through the season the idea to do literally everything. So they have callbacks. They have, I know Jetman ended on a weird kind of cliffhanger moment back in 1991, and it gets closure during Gokaiger. It is a really, really good show. It's solid. You don't have to know everything about Super Sentai going into it. But because I went into this with, you know, some knowledge of Super Sentai, I now have really delved into the backstory of these, you know, weird characters and these things that are happening. And I feel like anything that not only makes me enjoy it, but makes me want to go back and see that previous stuff, that, my friend, that's a sequel that works. And my number two, Kaizoku Sentai Gokaiger, is a sequel that works. And in fact, 10 years later, which is this year, and now I'm old, they've actually done a follow-up movie to follow up on the follow-up. So it's a sequel to a sequel, which makes it, I think, a C-sequel.
Okay. My number two is either the 10th film in the X-Men film series or the third film in the Wolverine trilogy. But to be honest, this is actually the sequel to The Wolverine from 2013 and not the third film in the Wolverine trilogy, which would include X-Men Origins Wolverine, which I think everyone would like to forget.
Yeah, I wish Marty McFly had gone
including
back and
Ryan
erased that one.
Yes. Oh, anyway, so Logan is basically the old man Logan storyline. Not really, but it draws heavy inspiration from the old man Logan storyline from the comic books. This one, Charles Xavier is incredibly ill. He is suffering from mental deterioration, and his mind goes crazy and can actually kill people if he's not careful. So Logan, played by good old what's his name, Hugh Jackman, care of Patrick Stewart, who plays Professor X, and really is having a miserable time with his life. He just wants to get out there, earn enough money to buy a boat and live happily ever after with Charles Xavier. Then there's a breakout at a mutant facility where people are trying to be injected with serums to make them mutants or to bring out their mutant powers. And so we essentially get an X-23 character that lands in Logan's lap, and he, Professor X and X-23, go on a cross-country trip to try to get her to safety, in the process also teaming up with a bunch of other patients from this facility. And Logan has to learn what it means to be a hero one more time, even if it means his death. Spoiler alert, it means his death. he makes the ultimate sacrifice. This is a fantastic story. If you've only ever seen one X-Men film in your entire life, you know all you need to know going into Logan, especially if the X-Men film has Hugh Jackman in it. And I'm pretty sure all of them have Hugh Jackman in it. Mm-hmm. This is such a well-executed story. It is so well shot and edited that when they dropped the first trailer, I actually got a strike on my YouTube channel, the Major Spoilers Video YouTube channel, because I looked at that and said, oh my God, this would be a great film in black and white. Let me show you how great this film would be in black and white. And so I took the trailer, like literally the day that it was released, ran it through a black and white filter and reposted it and was putting things on there like, look how great this looks. Look how the cinematography and the lighting works so well in black and white. They really need to release this film in black and white. And literally 2 days later, I got a YouTube strike and said, take that video down now. And then 8 months later, after the movie release, they're like, oh yeah, by the way, we've got a black and white version of this film if you want to see it. So I really believe that they went in wanting to make this film black and white, but the studios were like, you can't do that. We're movie studios. We don't do black and white. What are we releasing art? what are we, back in the 1920s? Get that movie out in color. And so they had to release it in color. But the black and white version, if you have it on DVD or Blu-ray, or even if you bought the digital version online, the Apple version, at least, the Apple iTunes version, has the black and white version that you can watch as well. And I highly recommend that you watch Logan in the black and white version, because it is so good in black and white. It really feels like a nice noir adventure movie, and really makes you think that, you know, black and white is not a dead format. A lot of people think that black and white is for, you know, art films like The Artist or Mank on Netflix. But you can do some really amazing things with black and white. And Logan is not only a great sequel, but it's also a great example of being able to use cinematography and lighting to make a film look great, not only in color, but also black and white. So my number two, and really was the very first movie that I thought of when we were doing top five sequels, Logan is my number two sequel that you should check out. All right.
Nice.
Have you ever seen it in black and white?
No, I don't necessarily do that. I liked Logan, but yeah, I think I saw part of it when it was on your channel, and I was just like, oh,
yeah, you should definitely watch it. It really holds up in black and white. And when I did the process to change the trailer to black and white, I had to do very little tweaking to make it look good in black and white. Cause sometimes, you know, some stuff you need to brighten it up a little bit or change the gamma just a little bit, but this one, just straight black and white filter, produced amazing results. And I'm pretty sure they just did the same thing. Just turned off the color bear filter and just let it go black and white. So there you go.
That's cool.
Anyway, let us get to our number one sequel, the top of our list, sequels that are on everybody's lips. Matthew, what do you have for your number one?
My number one, speaking of black and white, is the sequel to a black and white movie. But it is a sequel done in full color, and it is, in a lot of ways, a sequel that completely kind of upends and redefines everything about it. My number one is Dawn of the Dead from 1978, George Romero's second film in the Something of the Dead, quintrilogy? I don't know. There's like 700 of them now. There's Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Night of the Living Dead.
To get you, Barbara.
But that's the first one. Dawn of the Dead is the one that takes place in a mall. And this is interesting because it was actually, at the time, it was like a real mall. And so what they did was they took the characters, they stuck them in the mall. And essentially, you can read this as something that comes in that same universe of Night of the Living Dead. For some reason, the dead have started rising. Night of the Living Dead doesn't really take the time to explain it. And I don't think that
They talk about a satellite crash, so you know it's something from outer space.
But they talk about a couple of things. They're like, yeah, something weird is going on, but they don't ever come out and say, you know, an alien satellite has come and radiation is causing the dead to rise. You know, like Return of the Living Dead Part 2 always, you know, starts with, hey, here's an explanation of these things that happened. But this movie takes place in a mall, and we discover that the reason that the zombies seem to be coming to the mall is because they remember loving the mall when they were alive. And so they're just trying to come in and find the things that they love in the mall and also eat people, which, you know, does happen. There is a remake of Dawn of the Dead, which is the only Zack Snyder film that I will recommend to you because I rather enjoy it. But the original Dawn of the Dead actually ends with one of those just incredibly infuriating as a child, but now as an adult, almost perfect kind of bizarre moments where characters get in a helicopter in an apocalyptic dystopian death trap world and fly away into the day. And so are they alive? Are they dead? Do they make it anywhere? All of this is kind of left up to you. There are sequences that you can read as this is what happened. There are sequences that you can read as this absolutely didn't happen. And I feel like that's half the fun of Dawn of the Dead. It's a more mature take. And it's really the point where we start seeing zombies as more than just kind of two-dimensional movie monsters and seeing them as an actual meditation on human nature. And, you know, when you talk about modern zombies, it's hard to remember that modern zombies, yes, do have, you know, basis in myth and legend, specifically in the Caribbean and the Mediterranean areas. And you do have all these things. But a lot of what we say is the modern, especially movie zombie stuff, comes from Night of the Living Dead, Dawn mm-hmm. of the Dead, Day of the Dead. So mm-hmm. this is the best of that trilogy. And given how much I love Night of the Living Dead, you should take that and say, hey, I need to rush right out on a buying frenzy and watch this movie. I don't know.
I think you can. I think they are pretty, that you can find them. In this one, in the original, did they also have a pregnant lady and zombie baby?
They had a pregnant lady.
But they didn't have a zombie baby?
Well, I'm not going to give everything away. Have you seen, there is a pregnant lady.
Have you seen the Zack Snyder Let's Break into Las Vegas Ocean's 11 zombie movie?
No, you keep telling me about actually, it. And I can't remember what it's called.
It's actually fairly fun for what it is.
What's it called?
Zack Snyder's zombie movie on Netflix.
Really?
I mean, that's what it should have been titled, because that's how you find it. Army of the Dead.
Okay.
Army of the Dead.
Now, is that an official entry to the Army, the blank of the dead, or is that a sequel to his of the dead?
It's of his of the dead series.
Okay.
But it's firmly set in this, you know, Romero pastiche universe. In this case, there was a zombie outbreak in Las Vegas, and they just told everybody, get the heck out of Las Vegas as fast as you can. The military surrounded the city and blasted anything that wasn't living. And then they erected these basically shipping containers all the way around, like shipping containers stacked three or four high all the way around the city of Las Vegas, and just contained the zombie outbreak there. And so when you leave Las Vegas in a hurry, there's bound to be lots of money left behind. And so the there's a twist, as there always is. But the idea is that there is all of this money still in this vault in Las Vegas. And this guy is like, look, I'm going to get the insurance. I already got the insurance for this, so I've got all the money. But how about if you're crew of crack commandos goes in there and gets all the money out of the vault, and then I've got double the money and you guys all get a cut of it? And they're like, okay. It's fairly interesting. It's got Dave Bautista in it. It's probably the biggest name in there. I forget who else is in there.
This is the one where they had to digitally add Tig Notaro.
Yeah. Tig Notaro is also digitally added in there quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it for what it is. And again, it's a zombie movie.
Right.
There's not a lot of highbrow stuff. At least in the original, Night of the Living Dead was a commentary on race relations. The Dawn of the Dead is all about commercialism and consumerism and capitalism. Day of the Dead is all about society breaking down and people turning on one another. At least those had an underlying message. This is just like, what if Ocean's 11 meets zombies? Go. And then there's like a weird spinoff to that movie, where it's like a prequel to Army of the Dead, but it follows just this one German safecracker guy, and it has nothing to do with zombies, which is really weird. That's a weird spinoff all on its own. But there you go. That's Matthew's number one, which brings us up to my number one, which has got to be, if I were to go through and say, what's the greatest Western of all time? It would be a fairly short list of films, and everybody would know them. But by far, the top of the list is the Clint Eastwood movie, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. This is Sergio Leone. This is a spaghetti Western, so it's not even filmed in the United States. It's got Clint Eastwood as the good guy, Lee Van Cleef as the bad guy, and Eli Wallach as the ugly. This is a story that takes place at the end of the Civil War. And pray tell, I heard this story that there's all this gold buried in a grave and we have to get there. And so everybody's kind of rushing to get to this gold. And along the way, they have to see the ravages of post-Civil War South. And it's pretty good. I think it's really good. So now I think there's probably some people that would sit there and go, well, I don't know if that's really that good. Ah, come on. It's Sergio Leone. It's an epic sprawling tale. It's got great music from, what's his name? Let me think of it here just a second. I can't think of it off the top of my head. What's his name? Morricone. Ennio Morricone.
Enrico Morricone.
Yeah. This is a sequel to A Fistful of Dollars and A Few Dollars More, which by themselves, Fistful of Dollars is a remake of an old Kira Kurosawa film. A Few Dollars More, I believe, is also another remake of another film. But The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, many people just think of it as its own standalone movie. But when you realize that it's part of this Man with No Name trilogy with Clint Eastwood in it, it's good. And that is why it is the top of my list for the best top five sequels to go and check out. And yes. I know Matthew has seen this movie.
Oh yes. I've seen it several times.
Yeah.
I like the music. It gets woo, wah, mm-hmm. wah, yep. wah.
And it's just, you know, Sergio Leone has a really, I mean, he's an Italian, right? A lot of this was mm-hmm. filmed in Spain. The weird thing is he has this really good grasp of how to tell this sprawling tale of the West, this open, lost time period. Mm-hmm. And if you ever see another one of his films, which I think is probably as good as The Good and the Bad and the Ugly, I would point you to Once Upon a Time in the West, which is just mind-blowingly good yeah. for a Western that, again, if Sergio Leone, I mean, he's obviously had to study Westerns at some point, but really captures the idea of the American West and the American spirit. And it's got Jason Robards as a bad guy. It's right. got Henry Fonda as a bad. I mean, Henry Fonda plays the worst bad guy in this movie. I mean, there's a scene where he rapes a woman and it's just like, whoa, this guy is bad. Not just because he rapes a woman. Yes, rape is bad, but just all the other things that Henry Fonda does. Really, if you want to see Henry Fonda playing against type, you definitely want to go see Once Upon a Time in the West. But what you really do want to see for a great sequel is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And that is my number one sequel for this time around. Maybe in another 10 years, we will revisit this topic. In the meantime, you can head over to our Discord server. You can join our Discord server for free, the Major Spoilers Discord server. I've put a link in the show notes for you to make it easy. Just click on that show note. Just click on that link. Your browser will open and you'll be able to join the Major Spoilers Discord server. And then you can go in to the top five channel and you can share your reactions to this episode. You can thank us for putting Star Trek and Star Wars on the lists for you. But more importantly, you can share your top five sequels. Now, why would you want to do this? Well, we love seeing what you're going to share. Sometimes that opens up a lot of opportunities for us to go and explore and read new books or see a new movie or TV show or whatever that may be. Other people will also enjoy seeing your list and they will share their lists as well. And you got to ask yourself why. And the answer is simple. Everybody loves a list. Take care.
This podcast is copyright 2022 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.